glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival is back and better than ever for 2026 at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with larger-than-life displays of plants and animals from around the world,
including dinosaurs and icons from ancient Egypt.
Jump on the new Turtle Express for a fun ride through the show.
Glowing Wild is May 1st through June 28th, 7 to 10 p.m. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
If we can make real cuts to government spending, and therefore to borrowing, because all marginal spending is borrowed, and also rein in the Fed, make all those things happen, and you can get inflation back down.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That was E.J. Antoni. He's chief economist with the Heritage Foundation, more at heritage.org. We talk in depth with him today about the economy, present and future. Also later on in today's program, Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department tells us about the great physicist Michael Faraday. First, we're joined by E.J. Antoni. He is chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, more at heritage.org. He's here on Hillsdale's campus as part of our annual business conference sponsored by the Hutchinson Center for Commerce and Freedom. E.J., thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Look forward to talking to you a bit about the topic of your lecture here, which is prospects for economic growth and a few other matters as we go along the way. For listeners who aren't following closely economic data every day like you do on your X feed, there are all sorts of charts and graphs there. How would you describe the current state of our economy in plain terms?
Oh, goodness. I would have given you a very different answer than 2 months ago. That's for sure. I was extremely bullish on the year. We really had, I think, all the dials lining up. Almost everything seemed to be pointing in the right direction. And unfortunately, the Iran war has really just thrown the economy a huge curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really has. You know, I like to say, I think the philosophy majors will appreciate this here on campus, that low oil prices were a necessary but not sufficient condition for the president's economic agenda and for really strong economic growth. That's gone now,
mm-hmm.
right? That has been completely thrown out the window. So the outlook has become extremely mixed. And not only that, Scott, but if we look at the confidence interval here, in other words, all right, what's the lower bound and what's the upper bound? In other words, we think economic growth outlook is going to fall somewhere in this range. That range has broadened enormously to the point where, you know, recession's back on the table for this year. I think it's unlikely, but it's certainly back on the table. The reason for that is because nobody has any idea how the heck this war is going to play out. Nobody has any idea what's really going to happen. You know, we keep hearing all these announcements of things like ceasefires, and then it turns out it's not true, or one side says it is, and another side says it's not, and the strait is open, the strait is closed. I mean, it's just, oh my gosh, it'll give you a headache just trying to follow it, because it changes minute by minute.
Right. And I've heard other economists say, and I would imagine you agree, one thing markets hate is uncertainty. And if there's one thing that the Iran war has brought us, at least temporarily, it's a bit more uncertainty.
Oh, yeah, a bit. I'd say it's the understatement of the day, right? So, no, you're absolutely right. Markets hate uncertainty. And unfortunately, that's what we have in spades right now. Now, I will say markets do seem to be pricing in that the war is not going to last forever, that it's going to be more or less resolved over the next few months, and that oil prices are going to be back down. A lot of times, you know, people get confused because they see the oil prices on the news, and those are typically for futures contracts. In other words, you're looking at oil that's going to be delivered typically, you know, it's like 2 to 4 months in advance, depending on which contract you're looking at, depending on whether you're talking about the global benchmark or the American benchmark for oil, et cetera. But if you look at dated prices, in other words, this is crude oil getting delivered immediately, or close to it, those prices are still up 120, 130 mm-hmm. in some cases. In other words, because of the shortage that exists today, not 4 months from now, but today, refineries are beyond desperate to get their hands on product today because we're missing a fifth of the world's supply. So, you know, you're having to see all of this supply come out of stockpiles, right? Whether that's the Strategic Petroleum Reserve here at home or private stockpiles here and abroad. Japan's got an enormous stockpile, so that's really been helping them kind of weather this storm for now, at least. That's the dynamic that's at play right now.
On the topic of the AI revolution, there is a necessary and needed energy to power the data centers that power artificial intelligence. And there's lots of conflict and lots of debate over those data centers across the U.S. From a purely economic perspective, is there an incentive to have those centers shored somewhere inside the United States as opposed to elsewhere?
Well, I think you're seeing that right now with the conflict with Iran, right, where they have launched missile strikes at different data centers within the region and are threatening to do more. So, yeah, there's definitely a risk. Absolutely, I think. Well, I should say, depending on where you locate it. Obviously, there are, I think, some overseas locations that are would be a heck of a lot safer.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why you're seeing data centers in some of the places you are is because you want them near energy sources,
right?
Because it is a purely energy intensive industry. So that's where the push for fast tracking small modular nuclear reactors here at home is, I think, really gaining steam, no pun intended, because you do want to minimize things like transmission, because there's energy loss associated
sure.
with transmission, right? So you want it right there at the source. Unfortunately, you know, this is coming at a really bad time, because this is not, you know, we're not building all of these data centers on the back of a 4 years of a Trump economy with an energy boom. No, we had exactly the opposite under Biden, where coal, oil, natural gas were all getting hamstrung, and they were subsidizing wind and solar, which are terrible matches for these data centers. And so at the same time you have this ramp up in demand, you have seen a decline in supply.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a decline in overall supply, but it's a decline in reliability, which is also a huge, huge problem. So, again, it's that double whammy of lower supply, higher demand, and that's where you're getting these big increases in prices today in terms of electricity rates.
Yeah. E.J. Antoni with us, chief economist for the Heritage Foundation, more at heritage.org. Talk housing a bit. That's a major issue, and there's lots of people complaining about the cost of housing, of course.
Sure.
I saw you post this past week, though. Sentiment has fallen in April, consumer sentiment when it comes to housing. Prices are being cut. Foot traffic has declined. So what's going on right now in the housing market?
Yeah, when we look at surveys both of home builder sentiment and then also the different consumer surveys, and there's a bunch out there, whether it's, you know, the consumer sentiment survey, consumer expectations, right? There's a lot. But in all of these different surveys, what we're finding is that the housing market just basically remains frozen over. Right. The violent changes in interest rates that we saw, the Fed keeping rates way too low for way too long, and all of their money creation allowed people to bid up the price of homes to never before seen levels. And then the very fast rate at which they had to raise those rates caused essentially this bizarre situation where people have golden handcuffs. They're trapped in their home.
Mm-hmm.
They can't sell their house because they're sitting on a mortgage rate below 3%. Selling it means they're going to get a new mortgage at literally twice the interest rate. They're not going to be able to afford the same kind of home. And, you know, it's become a huge, huge problem. And so, unfortunately, the only way to get out of this is going to be for home prices to decline. And in some ways, it'll be a repeat of, you know, 2007, 8, 9, where a lot of folks are underwater. And that's just the harsh reality. This is the problem with government manipulating markets, right? But yeah, that's what it's going to take, is going to be home prices coming down. And you are actually seeing that in a few markets, particularly those where you have seen local law enforcement cooperating with federal law enforcement to get rid of illegal aliens. Now, you know, unfortunately, the federal efforts there really seem to have fallen off a cliff to a certain extent. So I don't think the deportations are really going to continue much. So you're not going to get help there in terms of reducing demand by removing illegal aliens. But where you are going to continue to see help, and this coincidentally is a lot of the places that have been removing the illegal aliens, it's places where they're building.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Austin, you look at Dallas, Dallas-Fort Worth, I should say. You look at Miami, you look at Tampa, places where they, Phoenix, places where they have been building, like just going gangbusters on construction. And now all these housing units that they started construction on a couple of years ago, they're now all that supply is coming online. And that huge increase in supply is driving down rents. It's driving down home prices. And that's where you're finding affordability. They're really the only kinds of places in the nation where you're seeing any kind of affordability in terms of the housing market right now. So again, prices have just got to come down to make things more affordable. Otherwise, it'll take literally decades before incomes increase to the point where that's going to make up for the increased home prices. I mean, literally, there's only a handful of major metro areas in the entire country where the median household income today can afford the median price home.
More with EJ Antoni next. He is chief economist with the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and I Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio. Find out what's happening in our town, our community, and our nation. That's Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
A message from Todd with Reading Online Marketing.
Here's the truth. Your competitors aren't smarter and they aren't better. Their marketing is.
Reading Online Marketing has years of experience and results backed by real data to put you on top. For maximum impact, ask about exclusive KCNR radio and digital marketing packages. Put your business everywhere your customers are.
We are local and can answer all your questions. Call me at 530-378-4060 or visit ReadingOnlineMarketing.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Since 1934, Grange Co-op has stood for more than just a store. It's all about neighbors helping neighbors, families growing together, and communities thriving. And now, that tradition is here in Reading. From feed and garden supplies to tools and pet essentials, Grange Co-op has what you need. With service you can trust. Visit us today at 55 Lake Boulevard. Grange Co-op, trusted by neighbors since 1934.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out more Hillsdale College audio at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You can find older episodes of this program, plus The Larry Arn Show, the Hillsdale College Online Courses podcast, and brand new Hillsdale on the Hill, as we all celebrate America's 250th anniversary. All that at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio, including YouTube. We continue with E.J. Antoni. He is chief economist for the Heritage Foundation. More at heritage.org. E.J., prices and prices at the pump, prices at the grocery store, they are not rising as high under President Biden, clearly, but they are still rising. And people feel that, and they're not seeing prices decline. Is there any real way to cause those prices to decline without some sort of economic catastrophe to cause that to happen?
Well, this is one of the reasons why the economic forecasts have just altered so much with the Iran war. If we look at a lot of different prices, the inflation rate had basically gone to zero. In other words, they had stopped going up, and some of the inflation rates had actually started turning negative before the Iran war. In other words, prices had actually started coming down.
Right.
And if we looked at the trends, and if we looked at supply chain information, et cetera, it was very clear that a lot of food prices had basically stopped increasing were set to decline later this year. Now with the Iran war, all of that's gone out the window. A lot of that has to do with the fertilizer crisis. We talk about the oil crisis, and we should, but the reason we're talking about it is because it's so apparent. Every time we go to fill up, which for a lot of us is every single week, some of us even more than that, you're hit with it right. It hits you right in the face because you can see the price at the pump. You're seeing how much it takes you to fill up. But what about the fertilizer crisis? We have lost almost, roughly the same percentage of global fertilizer output as global oil output as a result of this conflict. But nobody's talking about it. Why? Because it hasn't hit the consumer yet. Farmers are seeing it, but it's not going to trickle down to food prices for several months from now. So come September, October, and later, depending on the food product we're talking about, that's when you're going to start to see the higher food prices kicking in as a result of this conflict. And again, it's very unfortunate. And it's not just food. It's a lot of other things. I mean, think about everything that we use. Think about everything that is made out of oil and gas, right? It's not just fertilizer.
Right.
Every plastic is everywhere in your life, right? All the price of plastics is going up. You're seeing chemical blend stocks that are used to make those plastics have already increased as a result of the shortage, but it's going to take a while to work its way through supply chains from, the raw materials to the manufacturing processes. It's got to go to the wholesaler and then to the retailer before the consumer finally sees those price increases. Look, under Biden, you had blowout government spending and the Fed printing tons of money right away in his administration.
Right.
Inflation doesn't peak for another 18 months. I mean, again, these things take time, and unfortunately, you are going to see in the months ahead sustained inflation because of what has happened with Iran. That's just the unfortunate reality that we have to grapple with now. Now, sorry, to get to your other question, though, on, is there a way to not have this bad inflation? Unfortunately, a lot is just baked into the cake at this point. And energy prices are not going to go back down to where they were before the war. They'll go back down, but not quite as low, because at this point you have had energy infrastructure damaged or destroyed. So that's supply that's going to be offline for a while. Qatar, for example, has a gas field that's going to take 3 to 5 years to get it back to its previous levels of production. Okay, so again, that's just baked into the cake. But if we can actually get Doge back, if we can make real cuts to government spending and not add another $200 billion with a Pentagon supplemental, you know, make real cuts to spending and therefore to borrowing, because all marginal spending is borrowed, and also rein in the Fed. Hopefully Kevin Warsh will do that if he is confirmed later this year. Make all those things happen and you can get inflation back down. But I mean, that's tough. It is not easy to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Right? Yeah. EJ and Tony with us, chief economist for the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. We hear a lot about productivity when it comes to the strength of our economy. Why is that such a key factor? How is the U.S. doing on that front?
Well, productivity is where we get real wage growth. You know, if you can be more productive, and I'm experiencing this right now with AI, I can tell you firsthand, although, you know, anecdotes are just that, but it's also borne out in the macroeconomic data. Individuals are becoming more productive as they use AI. You know, I personally am able to literally take on additional projects now that I previously wouldn't have had the time for because I've become so much more efficient. And what is that doing for me? Well, it's increasing my income, and it's doing the same for a lot of folks. You're seeing it much more obviously in white collar industries than you are in blue collar, but it's just like going back to blue collar for a second. If you were to hand a worker on an assembly line power tools when he previously only had hand tools, he is going to be so much more productive. So that capital investment makes the worker more productive. And now because he's more productive, he can command a higher wage.
Yeah.
And so his income goes up. And that's exactly now what's happening with AI. It's just happening in the service sector predominantly instead of in the manufacturing sector. And you're going to see some job destruction because of that, but you're also seeing job creation, and the job creation outweighs the job destruction. So, you know, all of that to say, the AI revolution is increasing productivity in a big way. That's where, you know, that's a driver of economic growth. That's where you get real wage growth. People are better off as a result of that.
I heard economists for years warning about the national debt and saying, well, you're not going to like it when interest rates rise. You have to service that debt. We kept adding debt. Interest rates have now risen. So how big of a problem is the national debt? Is it a drag on our growth or a drag on our potential growth down the road when we're pushing closer to $40 trillion?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a huge drag, and it's a huge problem. And, you know, this is where, though, I will say, you know, Scott, I really fault a lot of the fiscal hawks and people who, you know, I'm sure they had the best of intentions, but they've been the boy who cried wolf for so many years. I mean, literally for, what, four decades? We have had people on our side, friends and allies, who have been saying, like, this is going to be apocalyptic, but they kept assigning dates to it, and or you know, they come up with certain thresholds, like debt as a percentage of GDP, which
right.
I hate that measure, by the way, because it's comparing a stock and a flow, and those things are not the same, right? It's apples and oranges to a certain extent. But they come up with all these different, you know, kind of red lines. And as we keep crossing them, everybody says, oh, well, I guess it's not that important, right? And then they think the national debt doesn't affect them. Well, did the 40-year high inflation caused by the national debt, did that affect you? I think it did. So, but regardless, it is absolutely impacting growth. It is artificially pushing up interest rates, which clearly impacts growth. And we are spending a tremendous amount of money now, well over $1 trillion, right? I think we're going to run at about $1.3 trillion this fiscal year to finance the debt. In other words, to pay the interest on it. So yeah, I'd say that's a drag on the real economy. I'd say that's an expense that we could be using for other things. Absolutely.
EJ Antoni is with us. He is chief economist with the Heritage Foundation. He has co-written a brand new report about the future of Social Security for Heritage. We'll ask about that next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope. That's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works.
You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Hi, this is Carrie Grawl. This season marks a new chapter for Organic Pilates, a rebirth of sorts in a new, larger downtown space. Alongside it, we want to introduce you to Harmony, a lifestyle boutique created as a natural extension of how we move and live with intention. We want to invite you in. Harmony and Organic Pilates, now open in downtown Reading. We're located at 1264 California Street in between Curated and Theory Coffee. We can't wait to see you.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Hi, everybody. McGraw-Millhaven here, host of America at Night. Tune in each and every weeknight for late-night conversation. We'll have interesting guests, informative conversations from people who have been there and have done that. Plus, we always have time for you, the listener, because we love late-night conversations. Be sure to tune in every weeknight from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the next America at Night with me, McGraw-Millhaven, right here on KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. E.J. Antoni is with us. He is chief economist with the Heritage Foundation. More at heritage.org. E.J., as we are almost halfway through, approaching halfway through the second Trump term, what kind of decisions will be before this administration on an economic front that he might have to confront, and which ones will be most durable? Which ones can last if there is a change in power, party power in the White House?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question. Now, I suppose take all this with a grain of salt because I'm a monetary scientist, not a political scientist, right? But I have to imagine that when the Democrats get power, things like the filibuster are just going to go out the window. You know, and I'm not even like a huge fan of the filibuster, honestly, because like, why was the Missouri Compromise such a big deal, right? It was because the Senate only needed 50 plus one votes, 50% plus one. Obviously not 50.
Right.
There weren't 100 senators back then. We didn't have 50 states, but it was 50% plus one. So it's not as if the filibuster was, you know, enshrined in the Constitution by our founding fathers. I feel like we have this reverence for the filibuster that I'm not sure where it comes from, I guess, but whatever the case, I have to imagine that as soon as the Dems get back into power, they will blow up the filibuster and ram through literally whatever they want. With all that as background, I'm not sure how durable anything's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, we're trying to cobble together another reconciliation bill this year. Why? Again, why not just say, you know, we're done with the filibuster and go back to 50 plus one and voila, just pass a regular bill. Pass, in fact, not just one spending bill, do all 12, right? Do regular order. And get everybody on record. I'm sick of this lack of accountability for people in Congress. So again, it's a very mixed outlook. And I would love to say that the president has a nice laundry list of things or a bucket list that he could get done that would be durable and long lasting. But I don't know. Again, given the where the Democrats are, I have to imagine they're just going to blow up the filibuster as soon as they get in, and nothing's durable at that point.
Yeah. On the labor market, we see jobs reports each month, little up, little down in places. We look inside, and I hear people talking about, you have to look at the difference between the private sector jobs created and the public sector jobs created.
Sure.
What do those numbers look like, and what are the trends there? What does that indicate? What should that indicate to us?
One of the difficulties with looking at these jobs reports is that if you do only look at the headline, it can be very deceptive. You know, under Biden, particularly the second half of the Biden administration, they were adding so many federal bureaucrats that it was goosing the jobs numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made the economy look like it was great. The labor market, I should say, look like it was great. Like, we're adding all these jobs. They're just a bunch of government workers doing nothing productive. How is that helping anybody? Right. So that was very, very bad. Now, under Trump, though, we've seen exactly the opposite. I mean, they've axed more than 10% of the federal workforce. You have to go all the way back to 1966, six decades ago, I'm not exaggerating, to find a lower print in terms of the number of public payrolls, so government sector. That's been really, really tremendous for freeing up all of that labor. However, it is dragging down the headline jobs number. So, again, what looked great under Biden was actually a sign of decay.
Mm-hmm.
What looks bad under Trump is actually a sign of the reprivatization and therefore growth of the real economy. Now, that being said, even the private sector job growth over the last year has been lackluster. We just got to recognize that that's the truth of the matter.
EJ and Tony, you've co-written a piece at Heritage about the impending crisis for Social Security, which is another issue we've heard about now for a couple of decades. What should we know, and what can be done about the impending crisis?
So essentially, we're only a few years away here from the trust fund running out. And the whole trust fund thing is, I mean, it's just garbage marketing, right?
There's no lockbox.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was just a giant, basically, advertising scheme cooked up by the Roosevelt administration to try to sell the American people on what is literally a Ponzi scheme. If your business plan was literally identical, Scott, literally identical to Social Security, and you tried to create a business like that, the government would not allow you to do it. And if you did have a business like that, the government would shut you down and mm-hmm. throw you in jail for fraud. Because, again, it is a literal Ponzi scheme. People who are retired today are not paid for by the savings that they paid into the system. They are paid for by today's workers.
Right.
And so as long as you have this exponential growth in population and therefore people working and people paying into the system is theoretically sustainable, right? You need that, again, that exponential growth rate, because that is how you keep a Ponzi scheme going. Well, as soon as that stopped, which basically stopped with the baby boomers, right? As soon as birth rates started to decline, they didn't even have to go, you didn't even have to get negative. In other words, you're below replacement. Even before that, just declining birth rates meant the system was doomed.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the future at this point, the future has arrived. We're literally only a few years away from having to do mandatory cuts. In other words, it's not that checks are going to stop going out, but you're going to see a smaller check. So if you're a retiree right now who's already getting your check, guess what? Your amount's going to get cut in literally just a few years here. That's where we are.
I've seen a few studies look at the potential effect of the privatization of social, partial privatization of Social Security as proposed by George W. Bush, which did not go anywhere at that point 20-some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an idea still worth pursuing and expending political capital on? Would that help to solve the Social Security problem?
Yeah, I think it's the only solution, honestly. And it's a relatively clean solution, too. Look, here's the big problem that you're going to have to wrestle with, though. Again, because the system is set up as a Ponzi scheme, let's look at it as like a free business, free enterprise business here. Imagine somebody coming to you and asking you to invest in a fund and saying, look, I already have a bunch of investors in the fund and I need you to invest in the fund so that I can pay them the money I promised them. And you say, okay, what's my rate of return going to be? Oh, no, you don't have a rate of return. You're not actually going to get anything back from the fund. You're not even going to get your principal back.
Sure.
Wait, excuse me? What? What? No, I'm not investing in that. Well, that's basically what we're going to have to ask people to do. We have already promised all this money to retirees and even people who are close to retirement. Because honestly, how do you pull the rug out from somebody like that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're basically going to have to force young people who are paying in right now to continue paying in and acknowledge to them, look, sorry, nothing's going to be there for you. You're not actually going to get a return on this. Now, exactly how you do that functionally, what that looks like, I'm not sure. If you just get rid of those particular payroll taxes and you just take it out of the general fund and you have to increase marginal tax rates, I'm not exactly sure what the best way to do that is. Unfortunately, there is no good way to do it because it's just a terrible problem and there are no good answers here. But that being said, I think Trump accounts are, or something like them at least, is a really good off-ramp here. What you're going to have to do is say to people, all right, you're going to take some of your money, you're going to put it into the market, and you are going to get a really great rate of return because that's what our market does in the United States. And unlike Social Security, where you have a net negative rate of return, the vast majority of people anyway, you're actually going to have a positive return and a very large positive return. And so I think that is probably your only viable off-ramp to say to people, look, you're not going to have Social Security, but you are going to have something better at least.
Yeah.
And then from there, then you can transition into making the program completely voluntary, where you say to people, look, if you don't even want to put money into the system, then fine. Then you don't have to. If you want to go do something else, totally fine. Maybe instead of putting money to the market, if you have a business idea, you want to just put into that, or maybe you just want to do real estate on your own. So it's not even that you're putting money into the market via a REIT, right? A real estate investment trust. But maybe it's, no, I just want to manage my own, my own real estate period. So again, I think that's basically the only way to get out of this. That's the transition steps you have to take.
E.J. Antoni is chief economist for the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org, here on Hillsdale's campus, part of our annual business conference sponsored by the Hutchinson Center for Commerce and Freedom. EJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Up next, Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department tells us all about the great physicist Michael Faraday. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The Reading Rodeo is back. Falcon by the River, May 13th through the 16th. Tickets are on sale now exclusively at ReadingRodeo.com. 4 nights of heart-racing rodeo action, family entertainment, and unforgettable thrills with special theme nights each evening. Thanks to our amazing sponsors. Sierra Pacific Industries, Littleton Whiskey Block Beverage, S&L Group, and Reading Rancheria. Don't miss it. The Reading Rodeo, May 13th through the 16th. Visit ReadingRodeo.com.
For me, the best part of my day is when a commercial loan actually closes. The owner of the business, they finally have the cash to go do what they want to do to grow their business. They might have stressed about this, hoping it would all work, and when it all comes together as planned, it's a win-win for everyone. So I like that. I like it when people are happy, like, yes, I got my money, because it can be very stressful.
Plumas Bank. Experienced bankers. Real solutions. Visit PlumasBank.com.
Hi, friends. R.C. here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Diamond Crown Classic. Created over a century ago, and to this day, it remains one of J.C. Newman's finest examples of what a cigar should be. Dominican binder, creamy Connecticut wrapper, and a selection of five different fillers from the Caribbean to Central America. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Join us for the Chicks and Chaps fundraiser luncheon Saturday, May 2nd at the Reading Senior Center from 10:30 to 2:30 with special guest speakers Dr. Allen and Dr. Sackfield. Don't miss your chance for an exhilarating ride on Wreck-It Ralph and a chance to bid on a one-of-a-kind Chicks and Chaps belt buckle. Get your tickets today at ReadingRodeo.com. Just click on the Chicks and Chaps tab. Thank you to our sponsors Reading Rancheria, Valor Oncology, Gold Mark Jewelers, Dignity Health, Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, Four Winds Jewelry, and this radio station.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReadingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReadingBarbecue.com.
A message from Todd with Reading Online Marketing.
Here's the truth. Your competitors aren't smarter and they aren't better. Their marketing is.
Reading Online Marketing has years of experience and results backed by real data to put you on top. For maximum impact, ask about exclusive KCNR radio and digital marketing packages. Put your business everywhere your customers are.
We are local and can answer all your questions. Call me at 530-378-4060 or visit ReadingOnlineMarketing.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. You can find more about Hillsdale College Audio at HC Podcasts. We're joined by Dr. Nathan Herring, Assistant Professor of Physics at Hillsdale College. Dr. Herring, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We continue our profiles of great physicists, and today talking about Michael Faraday. Why is Faraday considered one of the most important experimental physicists in history?
Yeah, Albert Einstein once remarked that Michael Faraday was, in his mind, inarguably the greatest experimental scientist in human history. That's an extremely bold claim. Why do people make that claim? And it's because Faraday's experiments were not only very ingenious, and we'll talk a little bit later about what are some of the things he did, but very creative approaches to building off of work that his predecessors had done, but then also extremely detailed in his analysis of what was done. His lab notebooks were so clearly written that later thinkers could just take the notebooks and use them to reproduce the experiment for themselves. So he was just had a great experimental practice, and then also the things he discovered were truly revolutionary. And so for that, I mean, you can't ask for a better career as an experimentalist to do an experiment that makes a lasting impact and to do it in a way that other people can check your work and verify that you've done it correctly. Yeah, it's just a gold standard.
What were Faraday's biggest discoveries? How are they still shaping science and technology today?
Absolutely. So Faraday begins his scientific career as a chemist, and he actually discovers a number of chemical compounds. He's working in the lab of Sir Humphry Davies as his research assistant. He discovers a number of new chemical compounds involving chlorine and carbon. And he's the first to discover the organic compound benzene, which is an important hydrocarbon that appears in substances like petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
He is also the first to introduce the concept of the force field, this idea of an extended substance that fills all of space that can exert forces on other things. So this field concept today is central to how we understand fundamental physics. He introduced it as a way of visualizing the electrical and magnetic interactions that he was investigating. And then he uses this concept, as I said, in explaining the results of his various electromagnetic experiments, which leads to the discovery of so-called electromagnetic induction. And this is the mechanism which allows you to generate electricity from magnetic effects. And this is the principle behind which our modern electrical plants produce the power that powers our world. So we are literally using Faraday's discovery right now to keep the lights on in this building, to record, you know, this interview. This same principle is also behind electrical transformers. You know, many neighborhoods, you'll have a transformer box nearby. It can explode in the winter when it gets very cold here in Michigan. But these transformers allow you to convert large electrical voltages to smaller electrical voltages or vice versa. And so they're extremely important when you are, you know, you have one source of electricity that you want to use to power many different types of electrical components. And then he also used his discoveries to build the first electric motor, right? So which was an example of how you could convert electrical energy into the mechanical motion of a macroscopic object. And, of course, electrical motors are used all over the place in modern engineering.
Yep. Talking with Dr. Nathan Herring about Michael Faraday, these profiles of great physicists that we talk about. You said he is considered one of the greatest experimentalists. What made his approach to experiments so powerful?
Yes. Faraday had what we would call today strong physical intuition. He could imagine the physical relationships between things that others saw as just disconnected facts. So he could invent some sort of picture in his mind of what might be going on. But then this is the key part. He was deeply skeptical of his own understanding of basically anything. He's got this wonderful quote, "There is nothing quite as frightening as someone who knows they are right." And so he would always subject any of these kind of mental images he had into his mind. He would figure out, how could I investigate that? If that's really true, what else must be true about nature? And then design an experiment to look for that thing. And then iterate on that experiment, sometimes hundreds of different designs, always trying to isolate what could be potentially confounding variables. And this patient skeptical approach allowed him to look at a phenomenon from many, many different angles. As I said, sometimes of hundreds of times. And he was also known for being extremely precise. He kept detailed but simple to follow notes on all of his experiments, as well as clear drawings of the apparatus. And his notebooks were so well documented that later thinkers, like I said, would just use them to carry out updated designs of his experiments, sometimes just literally doing the experiment he had done decades before. So I think this approach of having the ability to visualize what must be true of the things that you're seeing in your apparatus, but then combining that with a distrust of your own immediate interpretation of what must be going on, made him a great experimentalist.
Is there a particular dramatic or brilliant experiment that he conducted that we can explain for listeners?
Yes, absolutely. The famous Faraday cage, probably one of his most dramatic examples. So the physicist, the French physicist Auguste Coulomb, had speculated that electric charges in the case of metals or other conductors, that the electric charge in such a system always resides on the surface. And so that would mean, if Faraday envisioned, well, if that's true, I should be able to build some sort of container, a cage, out of a conducting material. And I should be able to deposit as much electrical charge on this conductor as I would like, and yet anything inside the cage should be shielded from that electricity. And so he built such an apparatus. He placed inside it an electroscope, which at the time was a device for measuring electric charge. So he has this cage. He connects that cage to an electric generator by a current-carrying wire, charges up the exterior of the cage, and notices that the electroscope inside is completely unaffected. Huh. So the interior of the cage is perfectly shielded from any electricity outside the cage. And then he can repeat this experiment, placing himself inside the cage, and he doesn't get electrocuted. I mean, we're actually familiar with this effect, because if your car is struck by lightning,
right,
you should actually be, if your car is made of a conductor, you will be shielded from the effects of that electricity, provided it doesn't somehow cause a spark and explode your engine. But if the electricity should harmlessly propagate along the exterior of the car, and you won't even notice inside.
Did other famous scientists of his time recognize his importance, or did that come later?
Faraday is an example of someone who does achieve fame within his own lifetime. So despite his humble beginnings, basically once he publishes those results on electromagnetic induction, he quickly becomes a household name and is well respected by his peers. And then certainly later thinkers like Maxwell and Einstein held him in extremely high regard. He's one of the three physicists that Einstein had always had a portrait of in his office. And Maxwell whom we'll talk about later in this program series. Maxwell, who is often called the father of modern electromagnetic theory, was always very insistent on giving credit to Faraday, whose work he built upon.
If you could give one of Faraday's virtues or his lessons, put that into your hands and into the hands of your students, what would that be?
Faraday is an example of disciplined curiosity and humility. What do I mean by that? He was an intensely curious person. He read voraciously. He did many of his own experiments. But he did this in a disciplined way. He took meticulous notes. He was always worried that someone else understood what he was doing better than him, so he was very attentive to what had been written about the subject prior to him. So he investigated the things he was curious about in a structured way, reading the books of others, doing his own experiments, but not just doing it sort of haphazardly, but doing it in an organized way. And when you do that, that level of self-study, you can go very far.
Mm-hmm.
You can teach yourself a lot. He also had, though, this trait of humility, this idea that whatever his first instinct about why something was happening, whatever that first instinct was, you should be suspicious of it. It may not be as simple as you think. You should check and double check.
Dr. Nathan Herring, assistant professor of physics at Hillsdale College. These profiles of great physicists. And we talk about Michael Faraday. Dr. Herring, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to E.J. Antoni, chief economist with the Heritage Foundation, and Nathan Herring from Hillsdale's Physics Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hello, my name is Lindsay Myers. I'm the president and CEO of Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support and partnership over the years.
Hi, I'm Heather Kellenhofer, president of NorCal Breast Cancer Connection, continuing the legacy of NorCal Think Pink. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Redding Rancheria for all the support over the years.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
It's time to settle up and ride west. Wind River Resort and Casino is proud to bring Wyoming's own Ian Munsick to the Event Center stage. Friday, July 24th. Rising fast and bringing his signature sound.
Ian brings the west to the rest.
Tickets are just $60 plus fees.
But they won't last long, so don't wait.
Make it a country night to remember.
Call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN to reserve your room and grab your ticket.
Check out those boots.
Grab your hat and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hello, my name is Lindsay Myers. I am the president and CEO of Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support and partnership over the years.
Hi, I'm Heather Kellenhofer, president of NorCal Breast Cancer Connection, continuing the legacy of NorCal Think Pink. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Redding Rancheria for all the support over the years.
Redding Rancheria.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.